Welcome back to Middle Age Mediocre.
We are back with part four.
Middle Age and Mysterious.
Oh, are we changing the show name again?
No, we're solving
mysteries. We are solving mysteries. This is part four of the best of the Unsolved Mysteries Iceberg made by Jimbo Seth.
Good old Jimbo Seth.
So this one is going to be mostly like cryptids.
Okay.
However, there are going to be a couple of non-cryptid entries, because the more I looked at the cryptid entries, there's a lot of them that are just like, that's clearly just a big wolf. Like, it's just a bigger wolf than normal.
I don't understand half the words you're saying.
So, cryptid is like...
You explained it last time.
You know, Bigfoot, Mothman, Flatwoods Monster, things like that. Yeah, that's a cryptid.
And what's a big wolf?
So, like, I'm just saying, there's like a lot of... there's a lot of them that are like the wolf of something.
Oh, okay.
And it'll just be like...
Not like in Home Alone where he sees Buzz's girlfriend. Buzz's girlfriend.
Right.
Wolf.
The animal wolf.
Okay.
Yeah. So it'll just be like, well, that's just a really kind of big wolf. And people are like, no, it was a monster.
It's a monster.
You know. But you know me. My theory for everything is it was just a big wolf.
Yeah.
So I could be wrong. But I left it. Some of them are like, you know, there was a giant fish in the ocean, and it's like, well, okay, it's not really...
Wolf fish. Yeah.
So I added the interesting ones left, and so then I added a couple different little stories here,
it's
too.
It's your world.
My world. You're just
the big wolf. You're the big wolf, and I'm just, you know, a squirrel trying to get in that.
Big shout out to all of our fans in Croatia.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently we're...
You think Tony Kukoc is listening?
I hope so.
Man.
I hope, Tony, if you're out there listening... You were great.
Yeah.
One of my favorite.
Except for that one time where they wanted Scotty to take the last. Oh, wait, no, that's the opposite. They picked Tony to take the last shot, so Scotty sat out.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Scotty
Tony
pouted.
Kukoc. I always liked Tony Kukoc.
I did, too. Tony Kukoc.
I think it shows in our podcast, too, and that's why we're so big in Croatia.
Exactly.
Is he from Croatia? Because if he's not, we got to start over.
I don't even know if he is. I don't think he is.
There's some basketball players from Croatia, though. Shout out to them.
He is.
Okay.
He is. You're right.
Mystery solved. Our first one.
Croatian.
Number seven, right?
NBA players.
Did I get that right, too? Tony Kukoc,
number seven.
Nice.
Of course, one of the greatest from Croatia that never really, that I don't know what happened. I always thought he'd be a bigger star.
Uh-huh.
Drazen Petrovic. Remember him? He played for the Nets.
Well, he died, so that's a big part of why he never became a bigger star.
But while he played?
Yeah, he died in a car accident. In
that's right. Yeah. I was thinking it was after he...
Whatever. There's like a guy who played for the Pacers named Austin something. Really super bad hair. I think he was from Croatia.
I know we got Bojan Bogdanovic.
Oh, Bogdanovic.
He's currently, I think, still in the NBA.
Okay.
Tony Kukoc, Dario Saric, Ivica Zubac, Dino Raja.
Oh, I haven't heard that name in a while. If you guys are listening, write in.
I don't see the guy you're talking about here. There's a lot of Croatian players in the NBA at different times.
But the top is Tony Kukoc.
Oh, yeah.
He's the GOAT.
So, Bojan Bogdanovic may be taking a run. He might be giving him a run for the money. He's really good.
I like how you're disappointed that the guy that died did have a better career.
Yeah, I could have sworn at that it was after his career was over. But no, now that I... Yeah,
hey,
now,
why isn't Mac Miller put out any new albums?
Oh,
he fell off.
He does technically keep putting out albums. But okay, so we're here with part four. We got one part left after this. And next part's going to be weird philosophical...
Cool.
Things that we're going to, you know, try to...
Like, is the hot dog half eaten, or is the hot dog half there?
That's going to be one of them.
All right.
We're going to have to solve that mystery. So, next week's going to be a cookout.
I'll bring the hot dogs.
Okay. I'll bring the buns.
I'm going to put my wiener in your bun.
So, before we really get started, though, with these mysteries, I know we're both pretty big fans, but you're a really big fan. Have you checked out the new Blink album?
First off, after edging... I was completely turned off. And then I think they had the one song about how, like, they're friends again or something.
Yeah.
That was a better song. And I tried to listen to it on Spotify yesterday at work, and then it got the edging, and I had to turn it off. So I've kind of dabbled in it a little bit.
So I've listened through it once.
Yeah.
There are some elements of, like, old school Blink, new school Blink. So it's really, really dig Dance With Me. That's a good track off there.
I don't know if I got to that one.
It's like, I think, the first or second track.
Okay, I did then.
Terrified sounds like a Boxcar Racer song.
Uh-huh.
So I love that. Like you said, One More Time is like the one about...
Yeah, that's a good one.
I thought it was really good.
And edging still sucks.
Edging is fucking god-awful.
I started the album. That was like 7 or 8 on the album. They got to that, and I was like, I can't listen to it. I could have skipped it, and I was like, I'm just going to get back to a podcast.
So yeah, not a bad album. Definitely...
I haven't gotten it yet. I'm sure I will.
I think you'll get into it.
I have all the other vinyl, but...
I think we'll get into it.
If it came out on VHS, I would definitely buy it.
Right. So, we also wanted to talk about, we both watched recently, a horror film that's been, a lot of people talked about it, got really good reviews.
From Australia, mate.
Called,
Talk to Me.
Yeah. Yes, I did not realize it was going to be Australian until.
Oh, it's so Australian.
Very. what'd you think of it?
I liked it.
Yeah?
I mean, I felt like they could have, like, maybe... explained it a little bit more, kind of like, I don't know, right, developed it a little bit more, but also like I like how they didn't do it, because it just, you know, it's just the story, beginning, middle, and end,
right?
And it had some really good scenes, some really cool graphic violence scenes.
Yeah, I think they made like a passing comment about where he got it. Somebody traded it to him for...
yeah, but like they got it from the guy whose brother, you know, spoiler, like killed himself.
Yeah,
like, they never bring that up or anything.
Not until like the very, very end.
Yeah,
again,
like they say that's who they got it from, but they didn't say, oh well. But also, you know, he killed himself and stabbed his brother.
I thought it was really good. Would you do it if it was a real thing? Would you?
I would, just because I wouldn't think it was real, and I'd be like, bullshit.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would do it, and I think, because you got, 90 seconds?
Yeah.
Once you let it in, you got 90 seconds?
Uh-huh.
I think it would make for a great podcast. you get the mic set up, and just every 90 seconds is a new
person.
Is a new dead person in there.
I'd be like, how about you stop me at 75 seconds? I mean, we don't have to go to the full 90.
Yeah, I would definitely do it. I think it looked
hardly ever last longer than 90 seconds anyway.
Right.
In paranormal situations
exactly.
Like that, where you're holding a hand.
Yeah, your ectoplasm goes everywhere pretty quickly.
Who's going to call?
Like, there's been a lot of ghost activity in Joel's bedroom. that's, you know.
That's a good movie. I'd probably give it like 7.5, 8 out of 10.
Oh, yeah. It's up there for me. I thought it was really good. All right. Well, if you haven't checked it out.
Talk to me.
Give it a watch. Too bad it isn't on VHS. No. Although I'm sure somebody's done a custom.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Custom VHS of it already.
Yeah. How long till that happens?
It's already happening.
Oh, like, yeah, that's right. Because we saw where like our spirit doesn't have it, but they're like.
They're doing like the
the old ones, but yeah, so they're already releasing.
Oh, there's a bunch
movies.
Of people online that do customs of like new movies.
Oh, cool!
And they'll make like awesome covers for them and stuff. Yeah,
and they put it on film.
They're a little pricey. They're
I'm sure
$45-$50 a pop usually, if not more, depending on what movie.
I can get 500 VHS for $50.
Yeah, yeah. And there's just something about it that feels like. Like, if you're a really big horror collector, it'd be cool to have certain newer horror movies on VHS to show off.
Yeah.
But otherwise, just something about it that's just like, well, it's not really a VHS.
Kind of feels cheap.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not cheap, so. All right, so let's get into a mystery number.
We just had VHS games earlier today,
we did.
Too. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we're going to try to be a little bit more active on our TikTok.
Uh-huh.
Probably YouTube as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, maybe even
throw them on YouTube. But we are taking advantage of Joel's giant VHS collection.
Yeah.
Doing some games based around movies.
We read the synopsis off the back of boxes.
Not using character names or actor names.
That was fun.
And we're not gonna give away who won.
Yeah.
You have to
watch. God damn it!
You have to watch the video.
Oh, I'm so mad that we can't give away who won. No, I'm happy we can't give it away. Because it doesn't matter who wins. What matters is that you and I had fun.
Exactly.
And we got to bond together.
Yeah, the real prize is the time we spent together.
Yeah, I don't think we need to say who wins or loses.
Okay, I won't.
Okay, good.
You can watch TikTok video to find out, though. So, all right, with that, yeah, make sure you follow us on TikTok. Pretty sure it's just Middle Age Mediocre.
Probably can
find us.
I'm not on TikTok. I don't know.
You, I was thinking that I needed to give you the, make you download it and give you the login stuff for the middle-aged account.
Why?
And then you can just make videos too. So, we're both kind of just making stuff.
I can't download any more apps on my phone. Let me get a new phone.
Okay. Or delete some apps.
AT&T, if you're listening, send me an iPhone.
Yeah, AT&T. You just got Apple, the middle-aged mediocre endorsement. So you owe us phones.
Yep.
All right. Mystery number one for this episode is mystery number 31 for this numbers. Series. And this is going to be about Frank Shaw's gargoyle.
Okay.
What do you know about gargoyles?
They're stoned. They're little statues. They're easy to steal when you see them in people's houses, like out front in their little garden. Just grab a gargoyle. This is, you know, like a long time ago.
Did you ever watch the cartoon?
Allegedly. No.
Pretty good cartoon.
I was a little bit past my cartoon watching.
It was a very, grown-up cartoon for kids, I would say.
They had gargoyles at the Denver airport that moved.
Did they?
Shit. Yeah, just.
That's cool.
We're going to put gargoyles up at the airport.
All right, well, Frank That's Shaw's creepy. Gargoyle is a bizarre monster sighted in 1986. A NASA employee had a horrifying encounter with a winged, jet-black, malevolent monstrosity.
Oh, that was a mouthful.
It's an encounter that would haunt him for the rest of his life. On a blustery evening sometime in 1986, Frank Shaw, a NASA archivist at Houston's Johnson Space Center.
Houston? We have a problem.
We have a gargoyle.
Gargoyle.
Claimed to have had a terrifying run-in with a creature that seemed to hail from beyond mythology. While information regarding this case is pretty sparse, his daughter Desiree would eventually reveal the details of this mysterious run-in to author Nick Redfern in 2004. Desiree testified that she first realized... Well, you're not really testifying if it's not a court of law.
Yeah!
Just because you're telling an author doesn't really mean it's a testimony. That she first realized that something was dreadfully wrong when her father
she
returned...
She brought her own Bible. He's like, yeah, you don't need
you
that.
You don't need to do that. This is... You can just tell me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to assume you're telling the truth.
Yeah.
Actually, the more crazy your story is, better for the book.
Sure.
She told him that she knew something was wrong when her dad came home late one night from work. While neither her nor her mother were particularly alarmed by his lateness, he often was required to work into late hours. They were both dismayed by his alarmingly apprehensive demeanor. They tried to comfort him. He was eventually able to compose himself enough to tell them about what he ran into. According to him, he was walking to his car at the end of his shift when he happened to glance up and see a ghastly black gargoyle-like figure perched ominously on the edge of one of the Space Center's buildings. He claimed that he was frozen in horror at the sight of this apparition, which, according to his description, was a jet-black humanoid that seemed to have a large cape draped across its shoulders. This was a magician, I think.
Is he Bobby the Brain Heenan?
Yes, I hope.
Humanoid!
As if that wasn't bizarre enough, he claimed that he saw two massive bat-like wings sticking out of either side of the fabric of what he perceived to be a cape. But the cape could have been like wrinkled flesh.
Oh.
This description seems to bear at least a passing resemblance not only to the Mothman, but also to the Owlman of Cornwall, both of which are said to be winged humanoid creatures which elicit an irrational fear of those who witness them. Remember, when wasn't it the Mothman that was seen at Chicago Airport or something?
Yeah, yeah.
There is a chance that it may also be associated with an ape-faced cryptid known as Big Bird, which terrified the residents of South Texas's Rio Grande Valley. That I would be hard pressed to be terrified of
a Big Bird.
Of Big Bird.
Yeah.
Shaw then told his family that not only had he seen this creature, but it had stared directly down at him. Shaw would later assert that he believed that this being actually seemed to be savoring the fact that it managed to inspire such terror in him. It was at this point that the gargoyle seemed to unfurl its wings, which Shaw started making a crackling noise, which Shaw stated made a crackling noise as it took flight into the powerful hailing gusts of wind. The sound of the crackling wings seemed to snap Shaw out of his stupor, and he turned and sprinted towards his vehicle. It must have been the longest moments of his life while he fumbled with his keys, unlocked the car door, dove inside, started the engine, and drove into the blackness of the night. Too terrified.
Turn your headlights on!
Turn them on, Shaw.
Shaw.
He couldn't even look back. He was too terrified to look back to see if he was being pursued by this gargoyle. Despite what must have been some initial skepticism, his family rallied behind him, believing that his tale was not merely a flight of fancy, but the simple truth. Nevertheless, both Desiree and her mother admonished him not to tell his superiors about this incident because then they would think maybe he was, you know, losing his mind.
Drunk.
Sean agreed with his daughter and wife. But as the days turned into weeks, he was unable to get the memory of this close encounter with the flying fiend out of his mind. Finally, he decided to work up the courage and confide in his immediate supervisor. Much to Shaw's delight, he was not met with mockery, but instead he was informed that he was not the first Johnson Space Center employee to have seen this giant gargoyle. In fact, his boss revealed to him that there's a secret file that had been opened on the creature just a few months.
Well, if you're just telling everyone about it, it's not a so secret file. Yeah.
The supervisor stated that the file had been created in response to the gruesome deaths of two of the base's German shepherds. Apparently, the corpses of the hideously mutilated canines had been discovered in exactly the same area where Shaw had seen the gargoyle. I bet those canines were just good boys.
Damn gargoyle. Definitely.
Following his unusual confession, Shaw's story made its way up the chain of command until it apparently came to the attention of some NASA officials who decided to interrogate him. According to Desiree, her father was intensely grilled by what she referred to as, quote, NASA security people.
Here come the men in black!
These NASA security people made it clear to Shaw that it would be in his and his family's best interest to refrain from telling his bizarre story to anyone else.
Don't testify about this to anybody.
Do not be testifying.
What the hell, man?
This
Let
might,
me catch you testifying about this gargoyle.
This might explain why she waited nearly 18 years to tell her father's tale. While there have been no new public reports of this gargoyle in over 2.5 decades, which may be due in no small part to NASA's policy of silence, there seems to be a fairly good chance that this bloodthirsty gargoyle may well be lurking in the shadows of the Johnson Space
Normally,
Center.
Two German shepherds will fill you up for about 25 years.
Is that
gargoyles, that's how their stomach works. The two German shepherds about every quarter century.
About 12 and a half years each.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be seeing them pretty soon here.
Okay. You know, this sounds like you were right when you said, you know, he was drunk.
Yeah.
This sounds more like he was fired from Johnson Space Center for, like, being a drunk. Or he was having an affair. That's why he was out late.
That's what, yeah.
Something.
And he's not a good liar. He's I saw a gargoyle.
But I'm thinking maybe he, you know, and then he makes up that, oh, NASA, they said, yeah.
And we have a secret file.
But let's say this is a real thing.
Okay.
It would not surprise me if NASA, like, you know, they've been to space, I hear.
Yeah.
It would not surprise me if they've brought back, like, things. Or just like molecules that have turned into things. So, you know, who knows what they've encountered and opened up.
And I would, even in 86, I would think they would have security cameras.
You would think. Especially at NASA.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, whatever. I've personally never seen a gargoyle.
Huh.
Not a real life one. Not
I've
one
seen
that's
the
living.
Statues, yeah.
I've seen statues.
Sure.
Next up is Mantis Man, which pretty sure there is a Mantis Man comic book character, but this isn't him. He's a roughly...
You wouldn't know, nerd.
Thank you. He is roughly a 7-foot-tall bug-like creature that has been reported in Hackettstown, New Jersey, near the Musconetong River.
Okay.
This cryptid mostly resembles a praying mantis, given which gives him his name. The odd thing about the two sightings of him that were present is the fact that both men were out fishing and saw it near a body of water. Praying mantises don't usually spend their times in water. They usually spend their times in leaves, on leaves and in the forest.
And church.
And in church, because
they
be praying.
They be praying.
Though mantis may be able to swim in
it's
shallow water.
To kill praying mantis.
It supposedly is, yeah.
Yeah, supposedly. You're going to say maybe that's something that
I think
you're
it
just
is.
Always told. And...
I don't know how. They, I mean.
I mean, I've killed dozens.
I've seen the police work in this area.
I mean, they're not going to give up.
I cannot imagine, them investigating a mantis murder. I just can't see it happening.
You've got to pray.
Although, maybe that's why they are so reluctant for other things. They're just tied up with all their mantis investigations.
All that mantis investigation.
So, with its huge size...
Mantis mania.
It can touch the bottom of the river without its whole body drifting away, so that could explain why it was in the water. In all of the reports, the Mantis Man doesn't harm anyone. It's likely afraid of the people who encounter it because it always seems to run away when they get close to it. So this was featured on Monsters and Mysteries in America, a show that I'm assuming was on the Travel Channel.
Yeah, that
or
Discovery
America.
Yeah.
But there was another sighting of the Mantis Man. And this one comes...
like hosted by one of the Duck Dynasty guys. Or, that was a crazy one that, there, wasn't it,
what's
boys?
The one that the guys always hear in West Virginia? Like, the River Monsters? Is that the one where the guys, like, used to be at the flea market all
the
time?
Yeah, they were at the remake, a couple remake shows.
They showed up in Remix.
People loved it. I was like, who are these guys? And people lined up.
Oh, yeah, Adam that ran Remix, he told me that they were going to be there. And, like, he was so excited. And I was like,
okay. He wanted you to, like, mirror that excitement. You're like, okay.
And I was like,
cool, I guess?
I was like, that sounds like just extra work on our part.
Yeah.
Like, are they going,
are they wrestling? Like, why are they at a wrestling
what are they
show?
Doing
What's
there?
Happening?
So this sighting comes with a police report.
Oh.
And they call the person that saw Mantis
That's
Man.
A mystery there. How do you get the police to do their job?
That is a big mystery.
Back to Blue. We're big fans of the Blue here on this show.
Sure. This. Sure we are. This is...
Croatian Blue. The Croatian Blue. We're all about them.
This is... They chalk this up to a man named Mr. Strickler. He says, according to the police report, I saw something strange a few weeks ago on the Mekong River near my home here in Hackettstown, New Jersey. I was driving home. I like that he told the cops. I was here in my home town of Hackettstown. I was driving.
Born and raised!
I was driving home from the drugstore on Newburgh Road. As I drove near the bridge over the river, I noticed to my left something that I thought was a fisherman.
To the left.
Standing in the river just off the south bank. I slowed the car and looked closer. If you thought I was a fisherman, why did you slow the car?
Yeah.
It wasn't a person, and it was transparent with a weird shape. It moved slowly towards the bank and into the trees. I drove further so I could see it coming out of the trees, and that's the last I saw of it. It was tall, 8 foot or so, and had long, thin arms hanging off of it. Its collar was pale brown, but I could see through it. The head was small compared to the body. It was a sunny day, so I thought it may be a glare from the water. But after I thought back, I realized I wasn't seeing a mirage or a glare. I checked the internet and didn't see anything about it. I mentioned it to a coworker in my office at lunch on Wednesday. He gave me the strangest look. I thought, uh-oh, he thinks I'm nuts. We went back to his computer, and he brought up the Hackettstown Forum with the Mantis Man witness.
Oh.
So this is a thing in Hackettstown.
Yeah, Hackettstown.
Now, people claim that the Mantis Man may have been an experiment going wrong, and someone who couldn't control it just set it free near a river. That's what we've done with most of our experiments.
Oh, I've set so many things free by a river.
It could have been a mutation in a breeding situation. They're saying, I think maybe that somebody banged a mantis.
Okay.
Some people speculate that there are more than just one of these mantis men roaming around.
I think it would take a mantis to bang a lady, because I can't see something that big coming out of a praying mantis. But if a praying mantis, like, somehow, you know, seduced a woman, got all up in it, and, like, you know, put his ectoplasm. Ectoplasm, and then, like, she gave birth to Mantis Man.
God works mysterious
ways.
And
she set it free by the river.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds like we solved this one.
That's half the plot to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I think so. The reason why most people think it's a giant mantis instead of being something else is because it looks and does things like a mantis. That makes sense?
Looks like a mantis, walks like a mantis, talks like a mantis.
Now, while some people think it might just be a very large praying mantis, you know, those 8 foot ones.
Yeah.
Other people suggest that it could be an alien. It's impossible for the current atmosphere to sustain a praying mantis this large, so it's likely that the...
What? Is there, like, scientific evidence to back that up?
Yeah, there is. So, like, the reason why there used to be humongous, like, dinosaurs and stuff is because... the atmosphere was more, there was more oxygen, more like that. So now that, like, there's all of us humans.
Taking up the oxygen.
Yeah. So that is actually, that's why certain things are very tiny, because it's like they're, you can check it out.
Okay.
I'll let you do your research.
I'm not going to.
I
will not.
Up next is Jeff, spelled G-E-F.
Nope.
In September...
G-E-F?
G-E-F.
Not even G-E-O-F-F?
Just Jeff. I guess you could say Geff.
Geff.
But on Wikipedia, it says it's Jeff.
I think it's pronounced a dick.
Okay. So, in September of 1931...
Oh, I wasn't even born yet.
The Irving family, consisting of James, Margaret, and a 13-year-old daughter named... Vori? V-O-I-R-R-E-Y. Vori?
Vori?
Claimed they heard persistent scratching, rustling, and vocal noises behind their farmhouse's wooden wall panels that variously resembled a ferret, a dog, or maybe a baby.
That's either a ferret, a dog, or a baby.
One of the three. According to the Irvings, a creature named Jeff introduced itself and told them it was a mongoose born in New Delhi, India, in 1852. According to Vuari, Jeff was the size of a small rat with yellowish fur and a large bushy tail. The Irvings say that Jeff communicated to them that he was an extra, extra clever mongoose.
Extra, extra!
An earthbound spirit and a ghost in the form of a mongoose. And he once said, I am a freak. I have hands and I have feet.
I like the girls with the boom. I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom.
Go to our TikTok, check out Torque. Absolutely killing the karaoke cover of the Humpty Dance. He said, I am a freak. I have hands and I have feet. And if you saw me, you'd faint. You'd be petrified, mummified, turned into stone, or a pillar of salt.
That's a good... Do that again, but put a little bit of, like...
Okay.
Put a little oomph behind it.
I am a freak. I have hands and I have feet. And if you saw me, you'd faint. You'd be petrified, mummified, turned into a stone, or a pillar of salt.
2023.
The Irvings... This mongoose has good flow.
It does.
The Irvings made various claims about Jeff. He supposedly guarded their house and informed them of the approach of guests or any unfamiliar dog. they said,
this dog may not be a good boy. I'm not sure.
Hey, Irvings, I don't know this dog.
Yeah. Yo, dog.
You know this one?
What, dog?
They said that if someone had forgotten to put out a fire at night, or the fire at night, Jeff would go down and stop the stove. Jeff sounds like a good dude. They said the Irvings claimed Jeff.
He's a silly mongoose.
The Irvings claimed Jeff would also wake people up when they overslept, and whenever mice got into the house. Like Jeff, I'm trying to sleep, but
yeah. It's my fuck day off. Okay? Fuck off. Yeah. What are you, a rooster?
The Irvings say they gave Jeff biscuits, chocolates, and bananas. And food was left for him in a saucer suspended from the ceiling, which he took.
Well, once you feed him, he's never going to
exactly.
leave.
Exactly.
I mean, what's happening here?
The Irvings claimed the mongoose regularly accompanied them on trips to the market, but always stayed on the other side of the hedges, chatting incessantly. So he couldn't let them see him because they could turn into pillars of salt.
Yeah.
The story of Jeff became popular in the tabloid
what
press.
What the fuck is this?
And many journalists flocked to the aisle to try to catch a glimpse of the creature. Several other people, both locals and visitors, claimed to have heard Jeff's voice, and two claimed to have seen it. However, physical evidence was lacking. Footprints, stains on the wall, hair samples, claimed to be evidence of Jeff were identified as belonging to the Irving sheepdog, as were several photos which were claimed by the Irvings to depict Jeff. Margaret and Vari Irving left the home in 1945 after the death of James Irving. Don't know if Jeff did it.
They reportedly
had to sell the farm at a loss because it had the reputation of being haunted. If the haunting is done by a mongoose, though,
that,
like...
That makes sure you don't oversleep and puts out fires.
Kind of just does some housework.
Yeah, it seems really cool and likes the cat.
In 1946, Leslie Graham, who had bought their farm, claimed in the press that he had shot and killed Jeff.
Oh.
The body displayed by Graham was, however, black and white and much larger than the famous mongoose, and Vuari was certain that it was not Jeff. She died in 2005, which she was older.
Man, you just got mad at her as an old-ass grandma, just like, oh, Jeff. And they'd be like, okay, grandma.
Okay, grandma.
Let's not talk about Jeff right now.
He was a mongoose.
He is. You tried to oversleep. He wouldn't let you.
You kids these days.
Oh, the footprints on the walls. We'd walk to the store every week. Like, grandma.
We get it. You're crazy.
Yeah.
In July 1935, the editor of The Listener,
Richard... He had flow for days, that Jeff.
Richard S. Lambert and his friend, paranormal investigator Harry Price, went to the Isle of Man to investigate the case and produce the book, The Haunting of Cashin's Gap. They avoided saying that they believe the story, but were careful to report it objectively.
Sometimes a dog would come up to the house, and Jeff would be like, hey, I don't know this dog. And we'd say, thanks, Jeff.
You have completely lost
it. I'm sorry.
Price asked Reginald Pocock of the National History Museum to evaluate paw prints allegedly made by Jeff, together with an impression of supposed tooth marks. Pocock could not match them to any known animal, though he conceded that one of them might have been conceivably made by a dog. He did state that none of the markings had been made by a mongoose, however. Upon visiting the Irvings, Price observed the double walls of wooden paneling covered the interior rooms of the old stone farmhouse, which featured considerable interior airspace between stone, as well as all walls also made of wood, that made the whole house one great speaking tube with walls like soundboards. By speaking into one of the many apertures in the panels, it would be possible to convey the voice to various parts of the house. According to Richard Wiseman, Price and Lambert were less than enthusiastic about the case, concluding that only the most credulous of individuals would be impressed with the evidence for Jeff.
Does credulous mean like dumb as fuck?
Pretty much. Okay. Gullible.
It's probably like the mom that died that did it, like started as a joke, you know, to mess with the kids, and they just like took off with it.
Or like the little girl was just having, you know, I'm a mongoose.
Yeah.
So yeah. But what a good name, Jeff.
Jeff.
If a ghost
is
ever...
Is it a good name?
If a ghost ever haunts me, they're like, I'm Jeff.
I'm Jeff. Like,
are you my dad?
What up, Jeff?
All right, next up are the Melonheads. In the American folklore of Ohio, Michigan, and Connecticut, Melonheads are beings generally described as small humanoids with bulbous heads who occasionally emerge from hiding places to attack people. The Melonheads of Michigan are said to reside around Felt Mansion, although they have been... also been reportedly seen in southern forested areas of Ottawa County. According to one story, they were originally children with hydrocephalus, who lived at the Junction Insane Asylum near Felt Mansion. The story explains that after enduring physical and emotional abuse, they became feral and were released into the forest surrounding the asylum. The Allegan County Historical Society asserts that the asylum never existed, though it was at one point a prison. However, the story has been part of the local folklore for several decades. Lake Town Township Manager Al Meshkin told the Holland Sentinel that he had heard the tales as a teenager, noting that his friends referred to the beings as wobbleheads. Some versions of the legend say that the children once lived in the mansion itself, but later retreated to a system of caves. Some versions of the legend say the children devised a plan to escape and kill the doctor that abused them. It is said that the children had no place to hide the body, so they cut it up into small pieces, which they hid around the mansion. Rumors exist that teenagers who had broken into the mansion saw ghosts of the children and claimed to see shadows of the doctor's murder through the light coming from an open door. The Melonhead stories of Ohio are primarily associated with the Cleveland suburb of Kirtland. I've been there. In Lake County, according to local lore, the Melonheads were originally orphans under the watch of a mysterious figure known as Dr. Crow. Crow is said to have performed unusual experiments on the children, who developed large, hairless heads and malformed body. Some accounts...
Oh, large, hairless heads.
Who could that be describing?
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Huh?
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 Some accounts claim that the children were already suffering from hydrocephalus and that Crow injected even more fluid into their brains. Eventually, the legend continues, the children killed Crow, burned the orphanage, and retreated to the surrounding forests, and supposedly they feed on babies. Legend... Because
there's so many babies in the forest.
Just tons of them. Yeah. Tons of babies in the forest. I think that's where babies come from.
Yeah, the forest.
They just grow in the forest. And then the stork goes down there, picks them up.
Makes sense.
Makes deliveries. Yeah. That's what I've always been told.
Sure.
Legends hold... Legend holds that the Melonheads may be sighted along Wisner Road in Kirtland in adjacent Chardon Township. The Melonhead legends have been popularized on the internet, particularly on the websites Creepy Cleveland and Dead Ohio, where users offer their own versions of the story. A movie, Legend of the Melonheads, released in 2010, is based on the Ohio legend and various other legends in the Kirtland area. And the 2018 horror anthology movie, The Field Guide to Evil, featuring 8 stories from cultures around the world, the contribution from the USA is a rendition of the Melonheads, where a man's son is taken into the woods and turned into a melonhead. I've seen that movie. I do not remember that, so it must not have been very good.
But I'm going to start calling people Melonheads.
I think it's good.
I really like that.
I like Wobbleheads, too.
Yeah.
The old Wobblehead.
Wobblehead is good, too.
Melonhead, yeah.
I like that Melonhead.
Shut up, Melonhead.
Melonhead.
I'll start calling you Melonhead.
I'll kill you.
Okay. I'm whatever. I'm down for whatever. All right, number 35. This one is going to be about sheep squatch.
Okay.
It's also known as the White Thing. It's a woolly-haired cryptid reported across numerous counties in West Virginia.
That's where we're at.
Predominantly within the southwestern
country
region of the state.
Roads, bobbleheads, melon heads, sheep fuckers.
The counties with the most sightings are Boone, Kanawha, Putnam, and Mason, with a surge in sightings taking place in Boone County during the mid-90s.
Boone.
Which makes total sense. Hell, that's yeah, where sheep squatch would be. It is described as being a quadruped about the size of a bear with entirely white wool-like fur. It has a long and pointed head, similar to a dog, but with long saber-like teeth, and a single set of horns, not dissimilar from those found on a young goat. Its four limbs end in paw-like hands, similar to those of a raccoon, but larger.
Ah, raccoon's got the cutest little adorable hands. I love watching little videos. Have you seen the video of the raccoon who's got cotton candy?
Yes.
And they, like, they always clean their food, so he puts it in the water, and then like it disappears. He's like, whoa, he's like, where the raccoon
and he just keeps doing it.
Yeah.
I love raccoons. It's reported to smell like sulfur.
I'm actually for raccoons.
In just, a trench coat?
Yeah.
I've always known.
Okay.
Always known.
It feels good to say it, though. It feels really good to say it.
So it's reported to smell like sulfur, which has been attributed through folklore to the beast being born within the TNT area in Mason County, like one of the Mothman theories.
TNT dynamite! TNT! Watch out for sheep at night.
And instead, maybe a musk scent gland similar to those found in many species in the order Carnivora, such as weasels and skunks. In 1994...
Oh my god, I had a skunk dream last night.
Ooh, skunk
dream. Where, like, skunks just kept coming through this hole in my wall, and, like, I would, like, have to, like, try to get them to run down the stairs and go outside. It's at my grandma's old house. You just unzipped me. I totally forgot about this right now. And, like, I'd, like, have to pick them up and throw them out. And, like, they never sprayed me, though.
Well, those are nice skunks.
Yeah, it worked out. How'd they get in the wall? They took Lily's little Patrick Star.
Yeah.
Because that's what I saw. Like, they pulled Patrick Star stuffed animal down through the hole. And then I thought it was the same skunk, just, like, throwing them outside, coming right back up the hole. But they look different.
Yeah,
there's like four or five of them fuckers in the wall.
Well, Patrick is their god.
Okay.
They were there to rescue their god. Yeah.
And they weren't mad at me because they're like, I wanted to go back outside.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They're like, we're trying to figure out how the hell to get out
of here. How did I get in this wall? I don't know. It wasn't Jeff in the wall. It was skunks. Wow, man. That was a crazy dream.
I'm glad they didn't spray you.
Me too.
So, in 1994, a former Navy seaman stated having witnessed the beast breaking through the forest. The white thing breached the brush line and knelt to drink from the creek.
The seaman saw the white thing?
The seaman saw the white thing.
Okay.
Here it drank for a few minutes before crossing the creek and continuing on toward the nearby road. The witness stated that they observed the animal for a while before it moved on into the surrounding brush. Within the same year, two children observed the creature while playing in their yard within Boone County. What they reported having observed looked like a large white bear, yet in this case stood up on its hind legs, making it over 6 feet tall. Startled by the children, the beast ran off through the forest, breaking limbs off of trees in its path. So if it's scared of kids, then
it can't be that
sheep
scary.
Squatch. Come on.
Yeah. What if it's just like a dude in a painter's outfit? You know, wear like that painter white onesie thing.
They are terrified of kids.
They are.
That's a fact about them.
Yeah.
All right. Well. So we're going to take a break. We're going to see if Sheep Squatch is outside right now.
I'm going to check the walls for skunks.
Joel's going to check the walls for skunks. We're going to see if there's any talking mongoose.
Yeah.
Mongooses. Mongoose.
If there's a dog that I don't recognize.
That's the main reason we need a Jeff around
dog.
Here. Yeah. All right. We'll be right back after these words.
Words.
People. Bye. And we're back.
No skunks.
No skunks. No sheep squatch. We did find Jeff.
Yep.
Mouthy little guy. Very mouthy. Doesn't know any dogs. Just kept telling him about all the dogs that he didn't know.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know that dog.
I tried to introduce him to Beasley.
Beasley.
Like, I don't know you. I don't think Beasley wanted to know him. So that's where we're at with
our
situations.
Yeah, he's a good boy.
Yeah. So... Last half of this part, part four here, we're going to go to number 36, the Flatwoods Monster.
Okay.
Staying in West Virginia for this one.
This is, I've done comedy where the Flatwood Monster
you have.
Is from. Yeah,
yeah where's
it at?
It's in Flatwoods.
I thought there was a town, too.
Oh, I forget what town we were in. Okay. Yeah, it's right there, though. It's got College, Glenville.
Yeah, it might be it.
Yeah. And then they got like a museum.
Yeah, that's what I saw, the museum, but they were closed.
So at 7:15 p.m. on September 12th, 1952, two brothers, Edward and Fred May, and their friend...
Ed and Fred?
Ed and Fred.
All right.
And their friend Tommy Heyer said that they saw a bright object across the sky, and land on the property of local farmer G. Bailey Fisher. Is he a farmer or a fisher?
Yeah.
The boys.
I bet the G stands for Jeff.
Jeff. Jeff Bailey Fisher. The boys went to the home of Kathleen May, where they told their story. May, accompanied by the three boys, local children Neil Nunley and Ronnie Shaver, and West Virginia National Guardsman Eugene Lemon, went to the Fisher farm in an effort to locate whatever it was that the boys had said they seen.
That almost sounds like a posse.
It is a posse. That's put together a posse.
Pretty goddamn close to a posse right there.
The group reached the top of a hill where Nunley said they saw a pulsing red light. Lemon said he aimed a flashlight in that direction.
It was a rave, man. Party.
Aimed a flashlight in that direction and momentarily saw a tall, man-like figure with a round red face surrounded by a pointed hood-like shape.
Bert Kreischer?
What?
He's got a red face.
He does
face.
Always have a red face.
Yeah.
Did you watch his movie?
No.
The Machine?
No.
Not as bad as I expected.
No.
Kind of entertaining.
No.
I hate Bert Kreischer.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes?
No.
Okay, no.
Okay.
No?
No.
Oh, I thought you would fall for it like
that. No!
So, in an article for Fate magazine based on his tape-recorded interviews, UFO writer Gray Barker described the figure as approximately 10 feet tall with a round blood-red face, a large pointed hood-like shape around the face, eye-like shapes which emitted greenish-orange light, and a dark black or green body. May described the figure as having small claw-like hands, and a head that resembled the Ace of Spades. According to the story, when the figure made a hissing sound and glided towards the group, Lemon screamed and dropped his flashlight, causing the group to run away.
There was a woman there, but Lemon
screamed. The National Guardsman screamed and ran. The group said they had smelled a pungent mist, and some later said they were nauseated. The local sheriff and deputy had been investigating reports of a crashed aircraft in the area. They searched the site of the reported monster, but saw, heard, and smelled nothing. According to Barker's account, the next day, A. Lee Stewart Jr. of the Braxton Democrat claimed to have discovered skid marks in the field and an odd gummy deposit, which were subsequently attributed by UFO enthusiast groups as evidence of a saucer landing. According to the former news editor Holt Byrne, newspaper stories were carried throughout the country, radio broadcasts were carried on large networks, and hundreds of phone calls were received from all parts of the country. The National Press Services rated the story number 11 for the year.
Oh.
A minister from Brooklyn came to question the May family.
What are the other 10, the top 10?
Then? I don't have that information.
Okay.
I'm going to guess this was 19... When was this?
1956?
56. So, like... a woman thought she could vote.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know when voting rights started. I'm sure it was some...
Cash hates women.
I'm sure it was a lot of racist stuff.
Yeah.
And terrible, terrible things. Saying. I love women.
You love everybody.
I don't love everybody. I love most
people. You give everyone the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not Jeff.
Yeah. Depends on if you know that dog or not.
Right. After investigating the case in 2000, Joel Nickel of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry... That's a thing.
My name?
Joe Nickel.
Joe.
He's on the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry.
That sounds fishy.
That sounds skeptical of that.
Yeah.
Concluded that the bright light in the sky reported by the witnesses on September 12th was most likely a meteor. That the pulsating red light was likely an aircraft navigation or hazard beacon. And that the creature described by witnesses closely resembled an owl. Nickel suggested that the witnesses' perceptions were distorted by their heightened state of anxiety. Nickel's conclusions are shared by a number of other investigators, including those of the Air Force. The night of the September 12th sighting...
Of course,
sighting,
the Air Force is going to be like, huh, that wasn't anything out of the ordinary.
The night of the September 12th sighting, a meteor had been observed across three states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. According to Nickel, three flashing red aircraft beacons were also visible from the area of the sightings, which could account for descriptions of a pulsating red light and red tint on the face of the supposed monster. Nickel concluded that the shape, movement, and sounds reported by witnesses were also consistent with the silhouette, flight pattern, and call of a startled barn owl perched on a tree limb, leading researchers...
Who? Me?
to conclude that foliage beneath the owl may have recreated the illusion of the lower portions of the creature. Researchers also concluded that the witness's inability to agree on whether the creature had arms, combined with May's report of it having small claw-like hands, which extended in front of it, also matched the description of a barn owl with its talons gripping a tree branch. But, like I said, nowadays, they have a Flatwoods Monster Museum. They do an annual Flatwoods Days Festival. It's very much like the same as like
Richard the Mothman. Richard Gere's gonna make a Flatwoods movie.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of surprised there hasn't been a Flatwood. I'm sure there's been terrible ones, but not like a big budget. It showed up in Fallout 76, that video game.
Yeah.
So doesn't Sheep Squatch and the Mothman.
Oh.
So yeah. So another one of the local monsters here. I did notice that West Virginia is kind of a hot spot for
pepperoni rolls,
cryptids, and pepperoni rolls.
Cryptids, yes.
I've always said that the most famous of all cryptids is the pepperoni roll.
Uh-huh.
So, up next, this is a doozy. I'm not going to give you the name of this one yet. First published in an issue of Strange Magazine in the 1990s, the tale of the giant shrimp in the laundry room comes from a transcription of a phone call allegedly made by a woman named Virginia Staples. The story is fairly obscure one outside of certain circles of cryptid aficionados, but in Bremerton, which, big fan of the song Move to Bremerton by MXPX.
Yeah.
Just, you know, throwing that out there. But in Bremerton, Shrimpy has a big fan.
Multiple plaid.
Garrett Kelly, a self-described liminal cartographer and explorer of all things weird, has been digging into the history of the mythical crustacean. It goes like this. In 1948, Staples was living in an apartment on Denny Street in Bremerton.
48?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is from the original woman, Virginia Staples, that saw this thing. She was living in an apartment on Denny Street in Bremerton. The apartment had a large basement with holes in the walls that were rumored to lead to the water. While hanging clothes on a clothesline in the basement, Staples couldn't shake the feeling that someone was staring at her. Finally, she turned around. She says, "I was so scared, I can still feel it. I couldn't move. In one of the huge holes in the basement, there stood this thing." She described the creature she encountered as being as tall as she was, which is 5 feet, and bright orange with little spidery thin legs, and an antenna. Staples left the house immediately and went to Seattle to live with a relative. To get an idea of what she had seen, Staples allegedly visited the aquarium. The only thing that I could find that looked anything like it was this little tiny shrimp. When she finally did return to Bremerton years later, she reported that the apartment complex on Denny had been torn down. "Really, nobody would really believe this," she says, "but as God is my witness, it really happened." Kelly moved to Bremerton recently from Seattle, where he helped, this is the guy that's been exploring this, where he helped found Liminal Earth, a crowdsourced map where people can post their strange, wonderful, unusual, and unexpected experiences. Before moving to Bremerton, he searched the internet for interesting local lore. That led him to Strange Magazine, issue number 6, and the story of Virginia Staples. He is now working on building like a museum there and making, he says, he wants to make Shrimpy as popular as the Mothman. I don't think
one woman's
story of seeing a giant shrimp-like creature.
Shrimpy
is going to do it.
No, I don't think so. Maybe this will help.
So
one lady and then us doing a brief story about it.
And as you can tell, the pickings for cryptids were slim.
Yeah.
So that was the last of the cryptids.
Okay.
So we're going to start now with this. This man could maybe be described as a cryptid because he's just odd. So this is, we're going to talk about the Silent Man. And this is from an article posted in 2021. An Englishman has been standing in the way of traffic for 7 years. He is called the Silent Man. He does not utter a single word and only stands in the middle of the traffic. This has caused several traffic jams on the roads of Swansea, as reported by the Metro UK. His name is David Hampson, and he has always been found at the exact same spot for the last 7 years. He's 51 years old, and nobody knows the motive behind his actions. In 2017, he was sentenced to 3 years. He refused to say anything in his defense, and in 2020, he blocked the road at the same spot outside the Central Police Station once again. He is once again facing criminal charges.
Wow.
He has not voiced his concern or the rationale behind doing the same thing every few months, so nobody knows what exactly his motivation behind this is. However, the police confirmed that he can talk, but just refuses to do so out of his own will. Moreover, he is not described as a polite man.
Oh.
So, real dick.
So, yeah, just his actions alone.
He has been arrested and sent to jail 9 times, and every time he refuses to explain himself. The judge says that they want to help him.
He does have the right to remain silent.
They do tell you that.
Yeah.
The judge says that they want to help him, not punish him, but he may be spending the rest of his life in prison or in some facility to address his problematic behavior and the issues lying beneath. However, they're not really sure if he wants to be helped. So,
yeah.
I mean...
Where, this is in England?
In England. People just do weird things. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know why you would go to the same spot. Can't believe nobody's ever hit him. Like...
That, just being so upset and mad.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So...
One man protest, but he's not saying what he's protesting. But
he's not saying what he's protesting. All right, up next is the Jack... I don't know if it's Froese. I think it's Froese. F-R-O-E-S-E.
Okay.
I think it's Froese. Frosty. We'll go with Frosty.
Froese.
Jack Froese mystery. The BBC reports that Jack Froese, 32, of Dunmore, Pennsylvania, died suddenly of a heart arrhythmia in June of 2011. 5 months after his death, his best friend Tim Hart said he received an email from Froese's account with the subject line, "I'm watching."
Oh.
One night in November, this is according to Tim, one night in November, I was sitting on my couch going through my emails on my phone, and it popped up, sender, Jack.
You get emails on your phone?
You really do need a new phone.
What a time to be alive!
It said that it was sent from Jack Froese. I turned ghost white when I read it. It was very quick and short, but to a point that only Jack and I could relate on. Inside the email was the message, "Did you hear me? I'm at your house. Clean your fucking attic." Before Froese died, Hart said that the two had been alone in Hart's attic talking about what to do with the space. Hart says that it was just him and Jack up there. Froese's cousin, Jimmy McGraw, also claimed he received an email from Froese in November after he had died 5 months previously, telling him, "I knew you were going to break your ankle. Tried to warn you. Got to be careful." McGraw said he had broken his ankle about a week before he got the email. "I'd like to say Jack sent it just because I look at it as he's gone, but he's still trying to connect with me, trying to tell me to move along to feel better." The source of the emails is still a mystery. Froese's friends say that no one had his password, and they don't believe that the account was hacked. Hart said he thought Froese's mother had been sending them, but when he asked her about it, she said, "Think what you want about it or accept it as a gift." Which is kind of, to me, sounds like a...
she didn't really deny it.
Sounds like a...
admission?
Admission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is weird, but I feel like there's ways to track, like, trace emails, right? Like,
yeah, I guess...
I see it in movies.
I guess if you could get somebody to actually do it, you could track, like, the IP address and stuff.
Yeah. I've watched Dateline. They can do it.
Yeah. So, the next up, the last one for today is the mysterious death of Todd Geeb. 22-year-old Todd Geeb seemed to have everything going for him. He had a good job with Hager Distribution Incorporated in Wyoming and enjoyed outdoor activities and sports. Described as friendly, smart, and outgoing by everyone who knew him, there would have been no reason to suspect that he was destined for a dark fate. Yet, in 2005, ominous forces would come for him, and he would be propelled into a very strange disappearance and death. On Saturday, the 11th of June, 2005, at around 7:30 p.m., he left the apartment that he was sharing with his cousin to go to the Half Moon Bar and Grill to meet up with some other friends who he left with at around 9:30 p.m. Their destination was an all-night keg party being held at a nearby apple orchard about 2 miles north of White Road in Casnovia, Michigan, and located just about a mile and a half from where he lived, where his friends dropped him off without incident. At around 12:45 a.m., things were apparently getting pretty rowdy at the party with a fight breaking out that threatened to transform into a full-on brawl. It seems to have been enough to urge Todd to leave, and so he left the party on foot, calling the friend who had dropped him off there to let them know he was on his way home. He left a message for his friend saying he was going to walk back to his cousin's place, which no one really thought much of since it was nearby and he was familiar with the area. From between 12:47 a.m. and 12:57 a.m., he made a series of phone calls that were a bit odd. In one, he called a friend and simply said, "I've had enough." In another, he simply said, "I'm in a field," before the phone went dead. The concerned friend called back and the phone picked up, but all she could hear was what sounded like either heavy breathing or the rushing of wind before the call cut out again. According to reports, the phone was not used again after that and no further calls went through. This would be the last time anyone heard from Todd, and he would go missing. A massive search was mounted to try to find him, including around 1,500 police and volunteers, as well as aircraft, who scoured the orchard and the area around the party site, as well as the stretch of road where he was expected to have walked along to get home, but they found nothing even after thoroughly searching the area three times. It was as if Todd had vanished off the face of the earth. On July 2nd, 2005, 3 weeks after he had gone missing, his body was found, but it was very odd for several reasons. First was that the body was found in Ovidal Lake, about 2 miles from Todd's home, right in the middle of the area that the search had completely and thoroughly combed. Then there was the fact that the body was reported as being discovered standing upright in the water,
oh,
with the head and shoulders breaking over the surface as if he had been swimming and had just gotten stuck there. Rather strange was that he was fully clothed with his wallet still in his pocket. So the big question was, how had he gotten into the lake and turned up dead? An autopsy was conducted on his body and it was found that he had no external injuries but had a blood alcohol content of 0.12, leading authorities to rule it an accidental drowning while under the influence of alcohol. It was deduced that he had gone to the party, gotten smashed, and then left to go wandering around before finding himself in that lake to drown while drunk out of his own wits. Considering the levels of alcohol found in the system, this seemed to be a pretty good decision or explanation.
Yeah.
But there was the strange phone calls and the fact that he evaded detection during the search of the area. It was also seen as odd that typically drowning victims are found bobbing up face down in the water. So why had he managed to stand upright, like just standing frozen?
I wonder if it was so muddy, like he was walking in it and his feet standing. His feet just got stuck. But still, you would think he would, like, his head would drop
with
down.
Yeah. Despite the weird details, in the eyes of the authorities, the case was closed. The man's family questioned why he would have suddenly decided to take a swim in the pond while fully clothed.
Drugs.
And an independent investigation by forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Sikirica found by careful analysis of the photos and autopsy data that while he had been missing for 3 weeks, he had only actually been dead for 2 to 5 days. It was also determined that he had no water in his lungs and that there were many clues that pointed to the body being placed into the water after death. Dr. M. Eric Benbow, a forensic biologist from Michigan State University who re-examined Todd's case, would say the following about the state of the body. Quote, there should have been more biofilm, more slime buildup. The other thing, it looks like part of his head was exposed. There should be insects in the clothing, even in the mouth, in and on the ears, and the folds of the skin. That's where these flies will typically lay their eggs. They've evolved to be attracted to dead things within minutes to hours to a day. We saw none of this in Todd's shirt.
Yeah, because that's how they can determine time of death, like how developed the maggots are, flies, or whatever.
Carcasses are consumed pretty quickly and dramatically. If a body was here, it would be colonized with some type of aquatic insect. Given our experiment, I find it very surprising that Todd's body had no reported insect activity and the clothing had no algal development. Based on our study, it is unlikely that his clothing and his body had been in there for 21 days. This heavily suggests that Todd's body had been put into the water not long before he was found, detracting from the official verdict that this was a death by drunken misadventure. This was corroborated by other experts who at all strongly points to the possibility that he was in fact murdered. Yet, the Michigan State Police have never reopened the case. It would later be found that Todd had traces of antidepressants in his system, although he had never been described these, and it is unknown why he had taken them or what connection they had in this case at all. It is quite possible that they were given to Todd against his will, and considering the fact that they can cause side effects such as hallucinations, confusion, agitation, cardiac arrest, coma, and seizures, it certainly seems suspicious. Kathy Gibb, Todd's mother, has also continuously fought to get the case reopened, but authorities refuse to do so. So what I'm wondering is if somebody gave him something at the party,
yeah,
he kind of like freaked out, maybe did have a seizure or something, died, and people didn't know what to do. So maybe like the body was kind of...
But they said he'd only been dead a couple days when they found him, and that was like the party was 3 weeks prior.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, that's what kind of throws me off is, like, I could say, like, drugs, but then, like, you would think the drugs would have worn off after at least a day. I mean...
And there doesn't seem... They said that we're... Doesn't seem to be any external injury, yeah. So it wasn't like somebody like beat him or tortured him or whatever. So yeah, I don't know if he was just wandering around for days. I mean, you wouldn't think there'd be.
I mean, someone would have seen him in that.
Yeah, and anything in a system would clear up.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty strange.
Where's that at again?
That was in Michigan.
Okay, Melonheads got him.
The Melonheads got him. Kept him hostage for a few days.
Yep.
The phone call, the one that says, "I'm done" or whatever he said. It almost sounds like he was accidentally calling people and kind of talking to himself.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe because he's all, "Oh, I'm in a field. Oh,
like,
I'm
maybe
done
he's
now.
Lost and he's just like, you know, I don't know.
That's a weird one.
But that is part four of our Unsolved Mysteries Iceberg series. We got one part left, so almost through this. And in the meantime, like we said, we'll be trying to update our TikTok channel more, so go check us out on there
fun content.
Our YouTube. Yeah, posting some fun movie trivia stuff and just dumb stuff, I'm sure.
Twerk karaoke. Yeah.
Again, Twerk killed it with the Humpty Dance.
Well, you know, he got tired of people saying he fell off.
Yeah.
He didn't fall off.
That had been the word on the streets.
Yeah.
Jeff was spreading that word.
Motherfucker.
Because Jeff doesn't know Twerk.
You got any volcano justice this week? Let me do mine and give you a chance to think. Mine I thought about because we were talking about the dogs. A lady brought her little ass puppy in for an eye exam and to get glasses.
Okay.
And I would like to throw those people in a volcano that bring their dogs out. Because I know why. They want the attention.
Yeah.
Like, the way they hold the dog and look at you. And my favorite thing to do is to ignore the dog. I love dogs.
Yeah.
I love dogs on the streets. And when I go to my friend's house and they have dogs and I get to pet dogs. But like, if you bring a dog out to a public setting, I will ignore the fuck out of that dog.
Because... Yeah.
Just because I know that's what you want. You want the attention of, oh, what a cute little puppy. Can I pet the puppy? So, yeah, that's my volcano.
But that does put me in.
I mean, I guess don't throw the dogs in, just the people.
That does put me in quite a predicament because I want to give the dog my
attention.
Yeah,
I know. You want to.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, it's not the dog's fault, but it's like, why would you bring a puppy to an eye exam?
Yeah.
And then they pick out glasses.
Yeah. So.
It's a bit
much. You know, I don't have anybody specific. But, you know, off the top of my head,
yeah,
I'm going to go with volcano justice for people who don't understand how drive-thrus work.
Oh, yeah.
How drive-thru restaurants work. You should know, like, now maybe I just go to drive-thrus way too often. I go to fast food places way too often. But, like, I know what I'm ordering.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, I know... I got a plan.
You're not going to sit there and look at the menu and
so, yeah,
ask questions.
The first part of this is, if you go through a drive-thru, hurry the fuck up and order your food.
Yeah.
Don't ask a million questions. Know what you're getting into and move it along, people.
Yeah. It's supposed to be quick and swift.
Second part of this is, if you go to a drive-thru and you are going to order like $60-some dollars worth of food, take your fucking ass inside.
Yeah.
And order that giant ass order so the rest of us don't have to stand behind, sit behind you forever.
How many cars is too many cars in a drive thru for you to go and get in line? Will you still get in line if there's like six cars in front of you?
It depends on how much I'm like, how is that the most convenient place for me on the way home?
Yeah.
There's a few factors that go into
this.
I'll
starve. If there's more than like, if there's more than one car in each window, I'm not stopping. That's another thing. I would like to get rid of the second drive-through lane window.
Yeah. Because
they always have to merge, and that's like the most fucking like stressing.
Anxiety.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You don't ever know if everyone's going to follow like the system.
Yeah.
And when they don't, you're just like, but you need
to. I'm supposed to be in front of you. I ordered before you.
We live in a society. There are rules.
Yeah. I only pull up to the drive-thru and I instantly do the evil villain thing. When I order, I rub my hands together. You know, I'm like, ha-ha, today I shall have.
Give me your finest Big Mac combo.
If you want to survive, I will receive.
And then the last part of this for the drive-thru etiquette is if you go through someplace and all you're ordering is like four milkshakes or whatever, you can go fuck off and die in a volcano. Because those take so long
For
the employees to make.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting here. I already got my food ordered. I'm hungry. I just want to go home.
You're in a line.
And you're getting your goddamn milkshakes.
I hate lines.
Go inside and order these things, people. Go inside.
You just ramming with your vehicle.
Well, I miss if I still have my old truck.
Yeah. Man, we unzipped you.
Yeah. So,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And just know what you're getting.
Yeah.
It drives me insane when I'm sitting behind somebody and like they're at the speaker and I can hear them being like, does that come with that? Figure it out. Figure it out before you get there.
We've been doing this for fucking years.
Know
decades.
What you're getting. All right. So, you know, let us know who you would want to see face Volcano Justice in the comments and wherever. Just however you want to do it. Until next time, good luck with your mysteries.
Yep.
If you have any mysteries you want us to solve, let us know what they are. Until next time, see you guys later.
Stay mediocre.
Bye, Croatia.